so I will be pairing Christmas sugar cookies versus gingerbread cookies with or without bacon. I decided to mix up a batch of hot buttered rum, and I also discussed and had several musings with that concoction. Even with the addition of bacon grease and sugar, hot buttered rum is the devil. And actually, there's not enough sugar that can't make that gag worthy. As you taste and sample and stir, you will be extremely drunk and ticked off that hot buttered rum is definitely gaggy. But anyways, I will go over, this will be the first part of me discussing my making of gingerbread cookies. And when you mix it all up, evidently you have to let it rest for a couple of hours. And since it's already 9:52 and I'm about an hour past my bedtime, I'm actually going to let it rest overnight, and I'm actually will roll it out and bake them in the morning. And I'll let you know how it goes, because this will be probably a three-part series where I'll talk about baking of cookies, gingerbread versus sugar cookies. And I will end this episode with a reading from Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And I'm glad you joined me, and stay tuned. So welcome back to the podcast. Well, I have made it back in one piece from the store. I am doing my concoction for spiced hot buttered rum as we speak. As I stated in my Instagram post, that some of these ingredients, with the exception of allspice, you can actually use in your cookie recipe, which I'll actually be narrating next. This particular wine enthusiast, hot spice rum recipe is actually from Wine Enthusiast. And it consists of a teaspoon of vanilla, a teaspoon of cinnamon, a teaspoon of ground cloves, which I have never used a day in my life until today. I'm going to leave out the allspice because I did not read that in the instructions before I started. How much is this? A teaspoon of ground cloves. And this is actually mixing, or I'm making this on the background. I have the water, Caribbean rum, and stick of butter simmering with my little mini crock pot that's used, I guess, for fondue. I don't know. I'm using, back to the recipe, I have a teaspoon of nutmeg. You would think I wouldn't have to use allspice if I'm using all of these fragrant spices. I'm going to be using a pinch of Himalaya salt. I got more than 2 ounces of rum mixed with the 6 ounces of hot water. And I don't have the cinnamon stick for garnish because I'm thinking about using a piece of bacon for my garnish. And I am going to add a little bit more water to get this to mix before I add it to my buttered rum mixture.
A day or two ago, I thought
and it basically says, in a mixing bowl, mix well until it's well combined. And then you're supposed to, the remaining batter, you're supposed to store that. You can put it in a heat-proof storage container for later use. However, I'm probably going to drink all of this tonight because I got cookies to make. And there you go. I have what they call a batter for my hot spice rum, and I will tune back in to let you know how it goes. So I have determined that hot buttered rum in its purest forms, either with or without, like I prepared, using the wine enthusiast recipe, is the devil. And there's no rhyme or reason for that. I think it was a coordinated effort between some weird, mean, hardy white person, probably of Germanic or Swiss or even Russian extraction. Because in its purest form, with no added sugar, is absolutely not even kinda worth it. But I've actually added a little bit more Caribbean rum and some brown sugar and a little bit of bacon grease. And I'm going to let it heat up for a minute, and then I'm going to retry it and see how it goes. But for right now, I'm getting ready, I'm preparing my bacon bits to serve as the toppings for my bacon covered either sugar cookies or gingerbread men. And since I don't want these episodes to run too long, I'm going to split it up, meaning I'll create or concoct my bacon bits tonight, make sure I don't overdo it on my gingerbread men, but I'm going to save the cooking of the sugar cookies for my episode tomorrow, and to, in fact, do the cooking and prep all of that in tomorrow's episode, if God is willing. And if anybody knows me being in charge of creating any type of bacon garnish or bacon bits, you take, it's a risk you must be willing to take. I didn't know, since this was like thick cut bacon, that there were like 12 strips of bacon. I used some of them to create my bacon infused vodka. If you navigate to my WordPress site, Dale's Angels Inc., you'll actually see a picture, because I actually used just a nondescript vodka, Russian base, and I've actually used the bacon in the vodka itself. I'll probably add, there is like a bacon lime bitters that I'm actually going to add to that concoction, which I think will actually make a pretty decent cocktail. I'm thinking about infusing it or combining it with either like tonic water with a little bit of more, like with the lime on the side. I think in itself, it'll make a nice balance between savory and sweet, and you can't go wrong with bacon. You have to be careful not to overcook the bacon, because you want the juices to actually be leached into the vodka itself. So I've actually prepped that for a different kind of cocktail enjoyment. It's like I'm a mad scientist up in here, and it's kind of fun. So let me get back to chopping up my handmade bacon bits. And again, being careful not to overcook the bacon itself, and making sure that you have a very sharp knife to actually create the toppings. I probably will still only have enough for maybe 3 or 4 cookies, so I will make sure that I don't eat any of these, and I will make sure I set enough aside to cover those cookies. So tonight's episode is going to be dedicated, or this portion of the episode is going to be dedicated to the making of the gingerbread cookies with and without bacon tops. This is supposed to yield 25 cookies, but since I am only creating them for me, I'm basically going to have all of my ingredients with the exception of the egg, because I don't, let's see, I probably am going to decrease the amount of butter and flour, because yeah, that's what I'll do, because I don't want to make as much of the batter for the cookies, because it's only basically for me, and I only want to do this as an experiment to make enough, because only 2 of the cookies are going to have topped with bacon, and I don't think I'll eat that many cookies. But I'm kind of excited about these gingerbread cookies. I remember my mom used to like gingerbread, and she used to order a gingerbread house that we can never eat, but she used to always order it from Swiss Colony. So I'm actually pretty excited about this in itself. So let's get started, and we'll go from there. Here I go mixing up the ingredients for the gingerbread. Okay, it says in a large bowl, using a hand mixer, beat the butter, brown sugar, and molasses until fluffy, adding the egg, vanilla. So, me being not quite following that exactly, because again, I am not a cook. I never said I was a cook, and y'all ain't gonna fit and talk me to death. So I'm adding all this crap together, making sure I put the lid back on stuff, because I don't want to spill anything. So I'm only putting stick of butter, because the recipe actually calls for 1.5 sticks. But since I'm reducing the amount of cookies I'm trying to make, I'm actually going to reduce that. I am going to use the full amount of the brown sugar. Where's my measuring? And it says 3/4 cups of brown sugar. Where is that measurement? These gonna be some sweet cookies, I know that for sure. I wonder if I bought enough brown sugar. I think I have some demerara, some granulated sugar, but I don't think that would actually mix as well as what they called for, or my brown sugar cubes that I actually use in my coffee. But, so 3/4 cups brown sugar. I got the egg, beet butter, brown sugar, and molasses. 2/3 of a cup of molasses. When is the last time that anybody you know, molasses? 2/3 of a cup. A fourth of a cup, somewhere between a half and a fourth of a cup, 3/4 of a cup, how about that? And when is the last time that anybody you know have used molasses as part of a recipe? I don't know, but we fit and see. How do you get molasses, all the molasses, out of the cup itself? Well, that's why you take your mixer that you've used for your spice rum, or another thing in there too. I don't know what these are called, but they have like these plastic tip things that you can actually scoop stuff out. Yeah, that works really well. Put that back to the side. And it says blend well. Beat until combined. Another medium bowl. Whisk. I think I have another one. Nope, I don't think so. Not here anyways. Whisk broke, or the handle did anyways. Mix up the flour, spices, and baking soda and salt to combine. With the mixer on low, then you add those dry ingredients to the wet ingredients, as well as the ginger, orange zest, and black pepper. I'm only using the black pepper, and then until the dough comes together. You divide the dough in half and then create 2 discs. Wrap each in plastic wrap and chill until firm, about 2 to 3 hours. So even though I mix all this crap up, I gotta let it rest for about a couple of hours. What in the world? What time is it? It's 8:14. Well, 10 o'clock, that's not too late. And plus I only have 33% battery on my computer, but that'll give me enough time to let this rest bake. Well, no, not really. Maybe I'll just do, like, I'll basically post this first part, the preparation, and then I'll actually do. I'll actually create the preparation, because the only thing that's going to be finished at this time is going to be that spice rum concoction. And then I will post this, the completed cookies, as a part of tomorrow's post also. But I'll make sure that I edit and create the post for part one of the gingerbread caper tonight. How cool is that? Welcome back to the podcast. Well, I will be reading now from A Christmas Carol. This particular edition was illustrated by John Leach. The original version of this particular edition with the illustrations, I went online to my alibris.com just to get some pricing information, because I was interested in purchasing a hardcover edition instead of the ebook that I'm reading from now. This book goes anywhere from $21,000 in good condition to as little as $1.99 that you can get the electronic version. So I will be on the lookout for said first editions, hopefully a buy that no one thought would be worth this much in the future. But anyways, so this is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickinson. Marley was dead to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. I'm wondering why Charles Dickens would start off something that should celebrate the glory of the season with talking about Scrooge and this dude's funeral. But who am I? I guess this is how you build up suspense. Anywho, change for anything he chose to put his hand to, old Marley was dead as a doornail. Mine, I don't mean to say that I know of my own knowledge what there is particularly dead about a doornail. I might have inclined myself to regard a coffin nail as the deadest piece of ironmongery in the trade. But the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile, and my unhallowed hand shall not disturb it. Or the country's done that. You will therefore permit me to repeat emphatically that Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead. Of course he did. How could it have been otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for, I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole assign, his sole residuary, legatee, his sole friend, and sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of funeral and solemnized it with an undoubted bargain. The mention of Marley's funeral brings me back to the point I started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I'm going to relate. If we were not perfectly convinced that Hamlet's father died before the deck play began, there would be nothing more remarkable in his taking a stroll at night in an easterly wind upon his own ramparts than there would be in any other middle-aged gentleman rashly turning out after dark in a breezy spot. Say, St. Paul's Churchyard, for instance, literally to astonish his son's weak mind. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards above the warehouse door. Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business call Scrooge and sometimes Marley, but he answered both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. A frosty rime was on his head and on his eyebrows and his wiry chin. He carried his own low temperature always about him. He iced his office in the dog days and didn't thaw it 1 degree at Christmas. So while I allow my bacon to fry, that I will be turning into two things. I will be turning it into the bacon bit toppings for my gingerbread man or sugar cookie challenge. And I decided, you know, I keep thinking about this and I think it would have been just nasty. But there is a distillery that makes sweet potato based vodka here in North Carolina. And I think if I were to do my bacon infused vodka, that may have been an interesting mix, I'll put it that way. But I don't think so, because it definitely did have a sweet potato taste, and I don't know. I know bacon makes everything better, but I want to see if this bacon infused concoction that's about to go down tonight is going to be all I think it's actually going to be. This particular recipe is made from the bacon itself is from the Greenfield Natural Meat Company. The pigs are humanely raised, 100% vegetarian, gluten-free, no antibiotics or growth hormones. And it's thick cut. Applewood smoked, uncured bacon. I ain't mad at y'all. So while that is cooking up, I'm gonna move that pan. Yeah, I don't need this pan actually. Right now anyways. I am going to continue to read, or I will continue the read from Charles Dickens's Carol, A Christmas Carol. And no, I haven't started drinking the hot buttered rum yet. Just saying. Jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm, nor wintry weather chill him. No wind that blew was bitterer than he. That's deep. If bone-chilling wind can't get you, you know you're cold as a mug. No falling snow was more intent upon its purpose. No pelting rain less open to intrigue. Foul weather didn't know where to have him. The heaviest rain and snow and hail and sleet could boast of the advantage over him in only one respect. They often came down handsomely, and Scrooge never did. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say, with gladsome looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. No man or woman ever once in all of his life inquired the way to such and such place of Scrooge. Even the blindsman dog appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming on, would tug their owners onto doorways and up courts, and then would wag their tails as though they said, "No eye at all is better than an evil eye, dark master." But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance, was what the knowing ones call nuts to Scrooge. Once upon a time, all the good days in the year on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy with them. And he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them. The city clocks had only just gone 3, but it was quite dark already, kind of like today. It had not been light all day, and candles were flaring in the windows of the neighboring offices, like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air. The fog came pouring in every chink and keyhole. and was so dense without that although the court was of the narrowest, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. To see the dingy cloud come drooping down, obscuring everything, one might have thought that nature lived hard by and was brewing on a large scale. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond a sort of tangle, was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so much, very much smaller, that it looked like one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room. And so surely as the clerk came in with the shovel, the master predicted that it would be necessary for them to part. Wherefore the clerk put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle, in which effort, not being a man of strong imagination, he failed. "A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you," said the cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach. "Bah! Humbug!" said Scrooge. He had so heated himself with rapid walking in the fog and frost, this nephew of Scrooge's, that was all in a glow. His face was ruddy and handsome, his eyes sparkled, and his breath smoked again. "Christmas? A humbug, Uncle?" And Scrooge's nephew, said Scrooge's nephew, "You don't mean that, I'm sure." "I do," said Scrooge. "Merry Christmas? What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough." "Come then," returned the nephew gaily. "What right have you to be dismal? What right have you to be morose? You're rich enough." Scrooge, having no better answer ready on the spur of the moment, and bah again, and followed it up with humbug. "Don't be cross, Uncle," said the nephew. "What else can I be," returned the uncle, "when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas, out upon Merry Christmas. What Christmas time to you? What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older." So, getting back to Scrooge, one of the key things to fry up bacon is making sure the pan is not too hot, and you pour all the rendered bacon fat in between frying to keep the amount of debris down in each fry up. But anyways, get back to Scrooge. "If I could work my will," said Scrooge indignantly. "Every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with their own pudding, ew, and buried with a stake of holly through his heart, he should." "Uncle," pleaded the nephew. "Nephew," returned the uncle sternly, "keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine." "Keep it? But you don't keep it. Let me live it alone then. Much good may it do you. Much good has ever done you. There are many things from which I might have derived good, but which I have not profited, I dare say. Christmas among the rest. But I'm sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come around, apart from the veneration due to its sacred name and origin. If anything belonging to it can be apart from that, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year, when men and women seem, by one consent, to open their shut-up hearts freely, and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave, and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good, and I say, God bless it. You damn scared. The clerk in the tank involuntarily applauded, becoming immediately sensible of the impropriety. He poked the fire and extinguished the last frail spark forever. I think when I listen or look at the reading of this opening paragraph by Dickens, I think he wanted to give you such a miserable description of Scrooge just to point to all of his negative qualities and to make his redemption even more remarkable, because he obviously hated Christmas, he hated humanity, and it also seemed like he hated himself because he was bound by such baseness that he couldn't control. But his nephew called him out on all of his shortcomings, and he made it so, and made the point. The point of Christmas is not because it's profitable. It's because people with open hearts open themselves up to give love and to receive love. And it shouldn't be just contained to this time of year. This should be something that we do all year long. And that's why I applaud this goofy nephew and his sappy take on Christmas. But even though he wasn't the richest among them, he basically gets the whole point of the holidays. And that makes me so thankful that I actually got to read this and share this with you. And I'm hopeful that you will stay with me in my subsequent episodes as we continue to read A Christmas Carol. I think besides the scriptures themselves, this is a good, an amazing representation of what this season should be.
Well, that wraps up this another episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. I hope you enjoyed my reading from Dickens. I will, the second portion, which I'll actually post tomorrow, will be the results of my gingerbread cookies and my foray into sugar cookies, and if is there really a difference, and which one are going to be on my celebration list of what are traditions that should make up Christmas. And I hope you will tune in for that particular episode. Don't forget to navigate to www.dalesangelsinc.com for all special offers and updates on nerd news. Drop me a line at tennesseefroisreading@gmail.com or even leave a two-mail non-trolling message at 423-463-0658. If it's not too trolly and not too annoying, I may actually read it or play it during the podcast. If you like what you're hearing and you're sick of freeloading, please become a patron at Podbean. Navigate to patreon.podbean.com/talkingfro or leave me a tip at paypal.me/FeliciaDAI. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I have enjoyed creating it. And I hope you have a great evening. Thanks and Merry Christmas.
Bells, jingle, bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun! ago, I thought I'd take a ride. And soon Miss Fanny Bride was seated by my side. The horse was lean and lank, misfortune seemed his lot. He got into a drifted bank and then we got upset. Oh, jingle bell, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. All the way.